And you're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial and to the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca on our live streaming service. As promised today, we have a brand new live interview about the very latest, not just about Gaza, but international efforts to help Gaza, what the international community, and I mean the real international community, not the United States government, is doing. So we have on the line today a member of the steering committee for Gaza's ARC, as well as a national coordinator with the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace. And I'm speaking about Sandra Rouche. Sandra Rouche, and I believe we have her on the line now. Sandra, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Brendan.
Okay, wonderful. Listen, Sandra, I want to thank you for being with us today. The truth is, as you may know already, some people have been asking about how you're doing, where you are, where you've been. You've been a guest on our program before, as some of our listeners know, telling us about Gaza's ARC and similar initiatives. Now, the thing is, you've been away from Canada on a bit of a little trip there, and there's been a few other Canadians and internationals who have gone to a certain conference. So I understand you've been away in Istanbul, and I'm just wondering if you can tell us what you're doing on this trip.
Well, Brendan, with everything that happened again in Gaza and how horrific it's been, everyone in the Freedom Flotilla Coalition decided that we need to do something again, and we need to do it right away. So we all went to Istanbul for a Freedom Flotilla Coalition meeting. And that was about a week ago.
Okay, well, I just want to get this straight then. Freedom Flotilla Coalition. So we're talking about another Freedom Flotilla. We're talking about, I mean, something similar to the first effort in which ships were launched with aid and relief supplies for Gaza to run the Israeli blockade of Gaza, coming from places like Canada, Ireland, Greece, Turkey. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about, yes.
Okay, because, I mean, there's been so many efforts with regard to Gaza recently. It's hard to keep track of them all. I mean, you have the Freedom Flotilla, you have Gaza's ARC, you have the hundreds and hundreds of protests in North America alone, as well as the world. You have diplomatic initiatives at the United Nations and within the European Union. You have defections, mutinies within the British Parliament and other parliaments around the world. A lot of people are moving on Gaza, whether they're activists, whether they're part of the Palestinian diaspora, whether they're part of the Jewish diaspora, whether they're members of parliament, political parties, and so on. There's a lot of activity and a lot of action on Gaza because we've reached a turning point with this latest Israeli assault on Gaza. And, you know, before we talk more about this new flotilla, I mean, this has particularly affected you, this recent attack, because you have been to Palestine, you have met Palestinians, Palestinian families. I think, are more close to the suffering than some others. So I'm wondering if you could tell us how you were affected by this recent Israeli action on Gaza.
Well, I spent a lot of time in Palestine and especially in the West Bank. But in 2009, I went first in March with Code Pink to Gaza right after that massacre of 2008-2009, when over 1,500 innocent people were killed. And I saw what that destruction looks like. I saw homes destroyed, ambulances destroyed, hospitals that had been bombed. I saw families that were forced now to live in tents because they no longer had houses. And I saw photos of the martyred children, and I heard the stories of the mothers, especially stories of the mothers, you know, sitting with them and hearing of what they had been through. Perhaps there was a telephone call that gave them 5 minutes to get out of their house, or, you know, a very good friend of mine who I met while I was there was just a young woman. She's really the same age of my oldest daughter. And so she had just finished work and came out and was standing on the street when the first attacks started. So imagining that happening again, I just, it's very, very hard. And it feels horrible for every one of us, but this was, it was really difficult for me.
Yes. I mean, I think of all the Canadian commentators and activists I've spoken with on this radio program, you have perhaps the most empathy for someone who's lived so long in Canada, for people in Palestine, having met families, having met mothers, and I think you're able to relate to their suffering. And I think it makes it especially difficult for you to conduct some of this activism or talk about it at times. And I appreciate your courage in discussing this. And it's courage that we're talking about today. You have familiarity with the earlier efforts of aid and solidarity, the international efforts in Gaza. The Freedom Flotilla 1 was something we extensively covered on this radio program. You and I discussed it. We held fundraising efforts in Hamilton. You and I were present at the Toronto fundraiser. Weren't we on that boat? Wasn't there a boat fundraiser a few years ago when we
had a magnificent fundraiser on a boat on the Toronto Harbor. And actually, at the very last minute, I had a personal problem happening. My daughter was really ill, and so the rest of the committee took over, and you were there, and everyone looked after things while I was in the hospital with my girl. So, that's just all part of it. It's everybody, we're all working together, and we're all real. We're all people, and we all have our lives and so much to do. But we can't stop until we can see a free Gaza, a free Palestine, justice. You know, like, we can't stop.
No, I mean, I just came from 30 consecutive days of Gaza-related activity. We had 3 days where there was a demonstration in Hamilton, followed by a demonstration in Toronto and a propaganda concert, which featured Gaza in part. And third day, Mississauga, there was a protest of Justin Trudeau's fundraiser. And we haven't even been able to put up the pictures yet or accounts of it because there's been so much going on. There's been events subsequent to that. This is the highest pace of activity I've ever seen. And it's because of the groundwork that has been done in the past. Freedom Flotilla 1, Gaza's Ark, the many fundraisers and activities that have occurred. We've chartered boats in Hamilton with the Palestinian Association. There's been a number of these. It's hard to even remember all the things we've done. But now there's a very pronounced effort to help people in Gaza. And you had that noble initiative to build a ship in Gaza to bring Gazan trade outside of Palestine so that they could connect with the outside world. We haven't really formally discussed on this program what happened to Gaza's Ark. So can you tell us about its status?
Well, our Ark is gone. At the very beginning of the bombing of Gaza, the our boat was obviously targeted, and it's gone. What is quite interesting, I find, is what was left of the boat is the actual words "Gaza's Ark." You know, something that we can have forever, but I wonder how an army could be afraid of a boat inside of Gaza that would have traveled out with produce and other things that have been made in Gaza. How could that be a threat?
Israel destroyed Gaza's Ark.
They did. They targeted and destroyed it.
The most moral army in the world.
Very shocking.
Well, you know, that was a shock to us, and we were glad that you could come to our first set of demonstrations. We had an event in Hamilton sometime late in July. That was the first of the recent round of demonstrations that we held in Hamilton. And at that demonstration, we had more than 1,000 people come out to that demonstration and march. You were a featured speaker there. You spoke very passionately about activism on Palestine. You spoke about Gaza's Ark and what it means as a Jewish Canadian to oppose these Israeli activities. And what caught me was A lot of people noticed that speech. A lot of people paid attention. There was a very fabulous video taken of the speech, which was put online and widely circulated. A lot of people were very interested in what you had to say. And that event signified a change of thinking in Hamilton. We had a subsequent rally in which we marched to four different places. We marched to a store that was selling Israeli products and protested that. We marched outside the Israeli bonds office. We protested a political office where we want the NDP to take a better position. The Conservatives, the Liberals, the NDP in South Ontario have all felt the heat on this issue, and it's not going to stop. It's not going to let up. I had heard more news about that at some of the forums that recently took place at the People's Social Forum, although, like you, I could not attend, having come off all of this recent activity and being quite exhausted. But let's talk about that activity, the new Freedom Flotilla. So the last Freedom Flotilla, that was a brave effort, very dangerous, bringing civilians and humanitarian cargo to run that blockade. But it's my understanding, basically, you're trying to put together either something similar or the same thing again. So, I mean, what is this effort? How does it relate to the previous Freedom Flotilla?
Well, you know, sometimes you just keep doing things, hopefully doing them a little bit better, but it's important that we don't stop, okay? And we know that that flotilla took up a lot of time and interest on the part of the Israeli government and the Israeli Defense Force. So it's important that we continue that effort that is of grassroots humanitarian activists who just want to see justice, who just want to break the blockade, end the siege. And so back in 2011, which was actually a second Freedom Flotilla. And, you know, we got to remember that the Free Gaza boats went in. They actually broke the blockade and got in. And then we saw that horrible disaster when, in, I believe, June 2010, when the Mavi Marmara was heading out with humanitarian aid and about 500 activists, and it was attacked at sea by the Israelis, killing 9 people then, and later we've just lost another person not so long ago from that attack. They killed 10 people. And you know, back then, a couple of years ago, I asked the captain, did you expect this to happen? And he said, I never expected they'd kill somebody before they even boarded our boat. No weapons, innocent activists, and that's what motivated us in Canada to say, okay, we're joining this. We're going to make a Canadian boat. And we did, didn't we?
Yes.
And what happened to that boat? It got locked down, like many others, in Greece. Eventually we got out, we got to Turkey, and a few months later our boat did sail towards Gaza, and it was attacked and kidnapped at sea, and the activists on board our boat were brought to Israel and then deported. And they still have that boat, our Tahrir. So we'll do the same thing. And a few weeks ago, the organization from Turkey, IHH, announced that their boat was ready. And so we decided that we would meet and see how many other boats and how many other members of this coalition we could get. And we are really on our way to do it again.
As you said, you have to do it again and again.
Yeah.
You know, it's with the civil rights movement in the United States, they had demonstrations. Many of those demonstrations were repressed or ignored, but they kept having demonstrations. There are high profile events, Rosa Parks, other people joined the movement, and it got larger and larger. You know, all the things we think about in the 1960s with the civil rights movement, that had been a lot of there had been organized already on a smaller scale throughout the entire 1950s, and it was planned and initiated in the late 1940s. So that's how long it took to get things moving. And the same thing happened with regard to South Africa and apartheid. Exactly. There had to be multiple boycotts. There had to be all sorts of international efforts. This is really gathering steam with regard to Israel. I mean, finally, there are apps like the boycott app, or you can look at Israeli products, identify them on your phone, which of these illegal products you should avoid, for example. I mean, there's things that we didn't have before. There's things that didn't exist before, and there's more and more people that are getting on board. I know in Hamilton, you know, someone started a Facebook group for Gaza in the city, and within a day, within 24 hours, there were more than 400 people that signed up. And these are just things that are happening regularly. The Mississauga protest of Justin Trudeau's fundraiser came together very quickly. It was organized in a matter of days, and it attracted people from all over the region. And that's how quickly things are moving. And there's a lot of pressure being put on political parties. So it's things like this Freedom Flotilla that gather attention in the first place, that gain attention. People start asking questions. What's the Freedom Flotilla? What are you guys doing? Why are you doing this? You can see that once you set sail, there's a lot of attention being directed towards it. What is the Israeli response going to be? And it puts the focus on Gaza. It puts the focus on the blockade. So why can't boats get into Gaza? Why can't aid get into Gaza? Because of Israel. They have been restricting Gaza. They never really ended their occupation. They control airspace. They control naval space. They have military control over that area. It's my understanding, too, that they're now blocking aid and relief and humanitarian supplies into Gaza. I'm not sure if you've had time to catch up on that news, but do you know anything about the current blocking of aid into Gaza?
No, I don't. And I'm not sure what's happening. And with the recent changes in the past 24 hours. Now we have to take a look at what that situation looks like. We have to keep watching it closely. And I think that what we need to be asking is not just end the siege, end the blockade, but open the port, open Gaza port. And, you know, let's open up an airport. Let's open up, let's make it completely free. Let's see all the products that are made inside of Gaza coming out, and let us be able to get everything that we need in.
Yeah, we have to break this cycle where Israel destroys everything in Gaza. The international community comes in, rebuilds, spends hundreds of millions of dollars rebuilding the power generators, the hospitals, so on and so on. Then Israel destroys it 3 years later. International community's got to step in. How about Israel stops destroying Gaza? Gaza is opened up to the world. It can rebuild itself. It has an economy, and you can end that cycle of violence. I think that's a vision that the world can get behind, and there's increasing pressure being put to change the status quo and the fake peace process that has handcuffed Israel and Palestine, you know, for the last 20 or more years. There's been some developments with regard to the Freedom Flotilla. There's some news going around of various sorts, and it's hard to get confirmed reports. There was an email I received. Someone said that a Turkish official or a Turkish government or someone had offered military protection for any possible Freedom Flotilla, but I'm not sure that's the case, and I don't think the Freedom Flotilla was interested in that. Do you know about that?
Yeah, this is really important to us, and we would never accept any kind of military assistance at all. That's not who we are. We are civil society. So I think that more this was perhaps a misinterpretation of what was said by the Turkish activists. I believe that what they're saying, my understanding, is saying that governments need to get involved. Governments need to do something, but we're not saying governments need to assist Freedom Flotillas. We can do this on our own. We will do this on our own. We are civil society, right? We're the people that are going to want to make a change, and we want to do it with without any kind of military or any kind of weapons or any possibility like that. It's not who we are.
Right. I mean, it always has been a very nonviolent movement. We saw that in the videos of the Mavi Marmara being boarded, for example. We've seen the testimonies of the Canadian activists who are part of the Tahrir, and that's very exciting and very important to us still to this day. But,
Brendan,
yes,
can I tell you something? When you were asking a little bit back about, you know, the motivation and the empathy, and you're right, it's part of because I was there and because I know so many Palestinian people, I know so many people in Gaza, and because I sat with those mothers. But I just think it's so important to understand that my activism stems from my Judaism. And I always just want to make sure that people understand that, that the actions of Israel do not represent Judaism. And so for me, it's really important as someone who taught Sunday school for years and who actually I'm starting again this year, who raised my family in a Jewish home. And, you know, I always thought that what motivated me is a need for tikkun olam, for healing the world, and that, you know, we all need to be part of that. So I just think it's important to understand that part of, well, of who I am.
You know, there was a recent interview with Judy Haven
yes.
from Out East, and, you know, I think she had a very similar sentiment. You know, and that is, as a Jewish person, you feel it's your responsibility in some way to see that the situation in Palestine is healed. And the actions of the Israeli government are very dangerous for Jewish people worldwide, for the image of Jewish people, for the practice of Judaism. So many things are being done by the Israeli government ostensibly in the name of Jewish people. And there's increasing resistance to that all over the place. You may not know this because both of us were not at the People's Social Forum. But I'm told that Independent Jewish Voices here in Canada is picking up new members every day. Every day now, Independent Jewish Voices in Canada is getting new members as a result of this latest Israeli outrage. There are many Jewish people here, right here in Canada, that say, you know, Israel is not speaking for me. This government, these military actions do not represent me. I have a voice. I have an independent voice. And here are my views on Palestine and Israel and Judaism and all these other things.
Right.
And that's very important that
it
people recognize that. And it's growing in importance. We saw in San Francisco, Max Blumenthal gave a very powerful speech about, you know, again, being Jewish, about, you know, Israel does not represent the Jewish people. And the sooner that's understood, you know, I think that the broader this movement can become. You know, there's many people who have been negatively affected by the actions of the Israeli government, mm-hmm. and they need to be shown a Jewish voice for peace, a Jewish voice for justice, a Jewish voice for international law, the United Nations, and the other values that we strive to represent. And I think you've been doing a great job of that. You stand as an example of what activists in Canada can do. Your actions and your activities have brought a great deal of attention to this cause. We're very pleased about that. And, you know, before we go, there was just one other thing I wanted to ask you about. That is, we're initially going to interview you a month ago in the middle of all this stuff, but you were unavailable because of all these activities. And you, I mean, you're nonstop. You were actually protesting. Was that at the Israeli embassy? I know you went and did a sit-in, and you had media attention and everything. So I think that was 3 days you were there, right?
Yeah, it was the Israeli consulate in Toronto, We brought our sleeping bags and our mats, and we stayed there for 2 nights and 3 full days, right on Bloor Street. And we were so impressed with the support, the people on the street. It was people were just shocked and devastated by this new attack on Gaza, and we want to make sure that people are aware. That's the only way to do it, is to just get out there. And so there were quite a few of us, probably each day we'd have 50 to 75 people coming and going, different groups at different times, and about a dozen of us sleeping each evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the only camping I do.
Yeah. Well, you got to get out sometime, right?
Yeah.
We spoke with Lynn Adamson about that as well. She was very capable on that subject. No, you have good friends and they're good people that are doing good activities. And I mean, you have personally helped bring attention. You are bringing attention to all of this right now. So we all owe you a great deal of thanks on this. And I know there are some charities that are operating right now. You know, we talked about aid getting into Gaza and the possible blocking of that aid. There are groups. Let me see here. You sent me a message saying, there's Gaza's ARC website has identified three charities or organizations that are collecting emergency humanitarian aid for Gaza.
Yes.
I found one of them. I clicked on the link. There's something, what is this? Nesef Sabil Canada.
Yes. If you would, that's a good one for Canadians because they can and will provide a tax receipt. And there's the other one I sent you. It's Dr. Muna Alfara. And I don't know how many of your listeners are following her reports live from Gaza, this incredible doctor, humanitarian woman who I have such respect for. And she is one of our advisors on our advisory committee in Gaza for Gaza's ARC. And she has an organization you can donate to. And the other one, I believe, is actually IHH from Turkey, and they are an incredible organization. And I feel very good about sending your money through them, that it will get to Gaza.
Yes, you mentioned Dr. Muna Alfara. I think some of our listeners are familiar with her story. We've reported a little bit on her past activities, her past humanitarian activities in Gaza. It was terrible to learn about what happened to her family. Utterly shocking and devastating. So many people, whether they live in Gaza or whether they're anywhere in the world who know people in Gaza, have lost friends and relatives in this recent bombardment, which is even more extensive than the cast lead in the last two operations. So that's why it's so important for us to get in and do what we can here. So listen, Sandra, I want to thank you again. I'm going to read out the charity information after the interview's over so people can get that, and I'll post the charity link on the internet once we upload this program. So we'll make sure that within a few days people can get that information they need about sending relief and aid to Palestine. So Sandra, thanks once again for being on our program today.
Thanks, Brendan. Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was Sandra Roosh, and she wears many hats. And, of course, she is a steering committee member for Gaza's ARC and a national coordinator with the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace. Her efforts on Gaza, on Israel-Palestine, are extensive. They go back a number of years. She's been very active in the last decade of activity, and we've seen some of these efforts bear fruit in terms of publicity, attention, humanitarian relief, fundraising, protests, and all sorts of other campaigns, whether it be letter writing, petition, and the creative efforts and activities that groups like Independent Jewish Voices are known for, which you can see some of them on their website, great interviews and whatnot.